So this week is Thanksgiving week. That's what I was thinking about today and this evening. And the first thing that I thought of today was, especially knowing I would be here tonight, was being thankful for you and your good company all these years, your support, love, your practice, and so thank you. I was just reading a quote from, I think it was Meister Eckhart, said, if the only prayer you said in your whole life was thank you, that would suffice. Love that. And just before I read that one, I was reading a Hafez passage where he said, one regret, dear world, and I'll just say this to you, one regret, dear world, that I am determined not to have when I'm lying on my deathbed is that I did not kiss you enough. Sometimes I feel like taking each person and either do the forehead touch or the just want to kiss you. No, anyway, so that's one of the ways that I feel my gratitude and thanks. And Dave, and so much gratitude for the people who volunteer here every week. You know, this doesn't all come together. You should see this room before you get here. I know a few of you have come here sometimes before it all comes together, but every chair is moved, and the camera set up, and the lights, and the tea, and the bathrooms open, and the heat turned on, and the whole show. And somebody has to show up and do it, and people commit, and it's really a beautiful thing. And just, you know, I've been leading now retreats for now finishing my 31st year here, and leading retreats, and I've noticed that the retreats that I've done through the year where there is a good manager, a good administrator, somebody who sets it up and, you know, the back office and everything that goes on at the retreat, if they're good at it, then I don't have to think about it. And it allows me to just give myself wholeheartedly to the sharing of the teachings and meeting with people, etc. And I feel that that happens here, because there's such great care in the way that everyone helps. And Dave was not the lead volunteer tonight, but he came in and he just went right to work. And of course, many other people help, but just the spirit of generosity, it's a beautiful thing. And when he gave a talk about the beautiful tradition, the 2,500-year-old tradition of mutual dependency. You know, you practice your generosity, I practice mine, and between the two of us, if we take care of each other, it keeps going, it keeps rolling along. So I'm so grateful for that you have participated in that process of giving and receiving. And I'm grateful for my own practice of generosity and just putting my life in that position where, you know, I just give it away, basically. And I know now that giving it away, you receive. And being thankful, you receive more. And grateful, you receive more. And it's really how life works at its best. You give and you... There is great joy in both giving and receiving. So thank you for that. And one of the things that he didn't mention tonight is the program that we have, Donna for an Evening at Mission Dharma. Most of you all know about it. And this program has been unbelievable, where the invitation is that if you feel moved, that you offer the entire weekly rental, which is, you know, it's a big lift for many, but many have come forward, some monthly and some, you know, very, very generously. And And tonight, one of our Sangha members, he wasn't so keen on having everyone know that he offered it, but he offered it tonight, Donna, for an evening of Mission Dharma, even though we didn't have time to make a plaque. And this is a little subject change right now, but still there's the same spirit of generosity. But it leads into something that I'm also grateful for, and I hope that you will, part of coming here and part of your own practice is that you're grateful for this too, is that he offered the Donna for an evening of Mission Dharma in honor of his sister, whose ashes are being spread today in New Zealand. His sister Lorna, her name is Lorna Heron. Lorna Heron, and she was the victim of schizophrenia. She had a mind that was extremely troubled, and this year on the 3rd of September, I gathered from a conversation, she jumped off a bridge and took her life. And so he offered, today was the day her ashes were spread, so he offered Donna for an evening of Mission Dharma. And just that gesture alone, to both honor and keep in his heart, her, and for us to keep in our heart, her and all those who, because of the challenges with human minds that can be crazy, can be really disturbed, that we don't forget that. And I think not just don't forget all those who are challenged, but don't forget that we, by virtue of being here and by virtue of having awareness, we have the capacity to. We have healthy minds. And that's, of course, a relative term. And it doesn't mean that each person here isn't tormented day in and day out one way or another, but you have awareness. And hopefully you've been cultivating that awareness. And for me, it is my absolutely greatest thing I am most grateful for, the greatest protection. Because not only does it protect me from being lost in whatever disturbance my mind is getting, but it also opens me to you, it opens me to these amazing senses that I'm also thankful for, just the miracle of being able to see, the miracle of hearing, of smelling. None of that would be possible if it was not for this ever-present wakefulness and clarity. That most primary gift that each of us is given, and yet so easily overlooked, and easily we fall into thinking, in being lost in our thoughts about what is lacking. The mental states of hindrances they're really just another word for lack. That wanting what I don't have and not wanting what I do have, that our mind tends to spin a lot, and when it spins so excessively in that, we go off the rails. And the fact that we can wake up and even notice that our mind is doing that is such a blessing. So I am so thankful for awareness, and I think in the face of those who are not able to utilize that gift of awareness, we have to practice. I brought a couple quotes along tonight. This was from a fellow named Neil Maxwell. We should certainly count our blessings, but we should also make our blessings count. To me, that's a great urgent message to take advantage of this precious life that we have, first of all, that we have enough health and relative to the rest of the world, amazing resources and safety, and we have a mind that can open to wisdom and love and compassion, and we have this awareness. And these conditions are not always so. There are many humans that are born that are just caught up in a kind of paranoia, about killing and being killed, and harming or being harmed, and mind just spins. And if you're free of that torment, and you can appreciate your aware presence, your awakened awareness here, you are so, so blessed. So I'm just grateful for this awareness. I'm grateful for the fact that this awareness is trainable, that I am trainable. That if I, I was thinking today of, recently led a retreat, it was called The Highest Happiness. And as most of you know, the Buddha was called Sukhiya, or the happy one. Those of you not so familiar with the teachings, you may have thought that he was called the great sufferer or something, but he was called the happy one. But he very simply said that the highest happiness is peace. The highest happiness is peace. And when he started out his practice, he didn't know where peace could be found. But he knew that was the hidden aim, was peace in everything. He was trying to find relief, trying to find a reliable refuge, trying to find something that, a place of rest in the middle of this crazy, tormented world with so much, so many kinds of suffering, and so little offered in the way of what truly relieves it. And so he tried everything, trial and error. And he distilled it down to the things that he realized as he went along, and he distilled it down to the capacity that we have to train our attention, train our actions, train our thoughts to be non-harming every day. That we can literally incline our mind toward non-harming. And if you incline your mind toward non-harming, it's amazing that you can actually shape your life by what you do with your mind, your body, and your thoughts. With our mind, we make the world. It's not an accident. World's the way it is because people are the way they are. And as long as people continue to be the way they are, the world will just be the way it is. But we can make the world a peaceful place, but that requires there be peaceful people. So the first thing he realized, if you shape your actions in a direction of non-harming, that you're harmonious with your speech, you tell the truth, you don't exploit others with your lust and sensuality, you do it, you connect deeply for the purpose of love and caring. You don't cloud your mind with intoxicants to the point of carelessness and heedlessness, where you cause suffering with your obliviousness. You respect each life form, because they don't want to die. Every being worships, cares about being alive. So you shape your life in that way that you practice non-harming. He said this is the proximate cause of being able to enjoy your life. This is the main cause of being able to enjoy your life. But he saw that that was a beautiful thing and it makes a beautiful life, but it doesn't bring you peace completely. Creates a happy life. But what brings you peace What he saw later, what brings more peace, is if you train your mind to stay here. You gather your attention no matter who you are, no matter what your situation is. You all have a capacity to be aware. You all have a capacity to anchor your attention in real time, what we call the present moment. Every person here can do that. And it turns out that you cannot have your attention in real time be lucidly aware and be depressed at the same moment, be reactive at the same moment, be hateful at the same moment, be even fearful at the same moment. In that moment of lucid awareness, there is openness. There's non-clinging, non-reactivity. There's freedom. We all have that capacity. I'm incredibly grateful for that capacity. But he didn't stop there. He said, if you keep doing this over and over, you will... I don't know whether this will actually translate in your mind of something that you... that from the time you wake up in the morning till the time you go to bed, you just keep orienting your life to be lucidly aware of what you're doing when you're doing it. It's not rocket science. It's just saying, okay, I know I'm washing the dishes. I know I'm eating my food. I know that I'm walking down the street. I know that I'm sitting on the toilet. I know that I'm talking to somebody. I know that I'm listening to somebody. I don't mean that you have that thought, but that you're present for it. And you incline your life to be present for it. And you keep doing it so much that your mind comes to this, it gets used to being in this single point called now. This single point where you connect with your life right where it touches you. Where you connect with everybody. It all happens right in this single point. There's no way of finding separation from life when you're at this single point. Separation from life only happens in our mind when we're spinning. And so we have this capacity, and I'm just so thankful for it, to be single-pointed. And the Buddha realized that if you do that more and more, you get happier and happier and happier, because it has some other side effects that are grateful for the fact that we're trainable. It pacifies the hindrances that torment us every day. It pacifies the wanting mind, because we start to feel so compelled by what's actually happening in real time that the need for something else diminishes. So then there's a natural feeling of gratitude. Oh, I have everything I need right now. How many of you feel that moment by moment every day? I have everything I need. That's the fruit of practice. That's not an accident. It may be your birthright and your natural state, but it's not the way that we're conditioned and trained. We're trained to be in a constant state of pursuit and associating our happiness with acquisition, with gaining something, becoming somebody. So that capacity to experience a quiescence, a kind of quieting of that chronic dissatisfaction and need to get somewhere, be somebody, or do something, figure it all out, to have some rest from that, and to have that rest be persistent. That's a blessing extraordinary. So I would love for everyone that I ever meet to put some of these teachings to practice to the point where that blessing is just as available, just as alive in you as it was for the Buddha. And there's no reason why not. We have the same nature, absolutely the same nature. We may have a lot of thoughts that say, I'm not that, I can't do that. But we also have the capacity to notice that. That's just Mara wanting to keep you bound up in a whole cycle of endless searching. Mara is that persona, that voice in our mind that says, that's the voice of doubt, the voice of, you know, don't stop. You need to do something. Don't sit there. That's selfish. When really, in fact, it's the most unselfish thing that you can do is come to that single point. Because with a sense of presence, attention to the here and now, attention, you've heard this before, attention brings affection. Love flows when I'm present. It doesn't flow when I'm lost in where I need to get to or where I've been. It just doesn't flow then. It goes into a state of freeze. Go into a state of fear, especially if my relief has to be some other time. I'm basically saying, I can't be in love now till something happens. So our own heart-mind training to be here is worth giving ourselves to. And but the Buddha realized that even that single-pointedness isn't the be-all and end-all. Said that what we really need to do, and all of us can do this, with the same awareness, same intelligence that flows from awareness, we need to use that single-pointedness to see what is true, to see for ourselves that clinging causes suffering, letting go brings freedom. And as one of the things I'm very grateful for is that in that trial and error, the Buddha realized that everything was coming and going, everything was coming and going, and his mind said, well, I clinging to things that are in a constant state of flux, that doesn't make any sense. And when he stopped clinging for a moment from paying attention, that simple act of paying attention moment to moment, his mind just stopped, it just let go. And he let go into the midst of everything. And in a flash of insight, he realized that the peace that he was searching for, the peace that all of us are searching for, was none other than the very consciousness, the very awareness, the very mind essence through which we're perceiving. Home, sweet home, is sitting on your own cushion, the one who knows in you. I am incredibly grateful for that. I try never to forget it. And that's why I say, never be separated from the sacred happiness that's without sorrow, here and now. That's the prayer that's the third prayer in the Tibetan, in the frequently repeated Tibetan prayer. May I have happiness in the cause of happiness. May I be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May I never be separated from the sacred happiness that is without sorrow. And may I grow in serenity, which means may I sit in the middle of all the loss and gain that I'll inevitably experience, the praise and blame that I will inevitably experience, the pleasure and pain, fame and shame. May I be able to sit in the middle of it. All the joys and all the sorrow. And we have this capacity. I'm grateful for this capacity. Whatever little measure of equanimity has grown in you or in me, we should be thankful for that. Being able to deal with this life, it's crazy. It's not easy. Anyway, I don't know why I went on. But it's not exactly Thanksgiving. But I'm really thankful for awareness. I'm thankful for you. I'm thankful for my teachers, I found a beautiful, another beautiful quote from Albert Schweitzer today. And I think this is, it doesn't have to be our teachers, it can be our near and dear ones, it can be our friends, it can be somebody, a clerk at the store, it can be anybody that wakes us up. He says, at times our own light goes out and it is rekindled by a spark from another person. Each of us has cause to think with deep gratitude of those who have lighted the flame within us. And, you know, I think I could sit here for maybe hours and hours, all the different people that have ignited the flame in me. And I actually include everyone here, because your light that you come here with, you know, I'm mingling with you, and you know, this is a shared event here. This is not just me offering teachings. You know, I could not do this if it wasn't for some kind of energetic exchange that happens. It's a kind of mingling. And I don't know about you, but I feel so refreshed after we're together. Because partly your gift, your generosity of your presence creates that, that's just like with, as it is with the geese, it creates that 72% greater lifting power when the geese fly together. There's just something about that. And just trying to keep the light burning alone. Nobody I have met in my life does this awakening process alone. Nobody. Well, maybe some people do. I don't know anybody, though. I know every single person that has come into, I've come into contact with, their awakening process has depended on the support of others. The cessation of their mental suffering has had something to do with some teaching, teacher, interaction, love, hug, look. That we just do not live alone in a vacuum. And so I'm very grateful for that. And I'm grateful for that practicing together, how it lights a flame and it keeps it burning. You know, the number one question at the end of retreats is, how do I keep the fire, how do I keep the practice going? Oh, I have all the best laid plans for a daily practice and it just fades right out. And usually the people who ask the question are those who don't sit with groups, who don't practice with other people. I'm not saying that you all have a perfect daily practice, but at least that there's something about when you practice together with other people, there's some kind of current that keeps flowing through our life, or at least it can, that might not burn as brightly if we didn't come together. So I'm grateful for that, of course. And I often think of also just the, as I said, just the sense of being present, but just the simple fact of being alive. You know, I talked about the sense doors before, the eyes, the ears, the nose, the body, just the miracle, the mystery, the awesomeness of being able to even perceive our life, but just the fact that of our existence is something so self-evidently precious about that. And I always think of Thoreau, who said, "I'm grateful for what I am and what I have." He says, My thanksgiving is perpetual. It says, it's surprising how contented one can be with nothing definite. only a sense of existence. Oh, how I laugh at my vague, indefinite riches, for no run on my bank can drain it, for my wealth is not possession, but enjoyment of being. So to me, it's a teaching and an aspiration to be grateful for what I am and have, and to have it be a mirror for those many, many moments of complaint. Gratitude is the antidote for ill will, complaint, insufficiency, lack. It's an antidote for so much. This is the week to count our blessings. Of course, Thanksgiving is, we always have to remember at Thanksgiving that it's become a beautiful holiday, but it's different native peoples associate this holiday with the destruction of their lands and their culture. We don't ever want to forget our, in our shroud of whiteness and privilege, that everyone's experience is different. And that, yeah, along with our gratitude, just some sensitivity about how others might perceive this same week. I am open, since we have a little time, I'm open to hearing any other comments about Thanksgiving or anything else that you may want me to talk about. Close to 9 o'clock now, but please don't hesitate if anyone has anything to say or question. And if I don't hear from you, I'll share a few more quotes.
I have another thing to say. There was a radio release this weekend.
If you could speak really loudly.
Oh, I can speak loudly.
Yeah.
There was a radio piece this weekend on a show called To the Best of Our Knowledge.
A radio piece on a show called The Best of Our Knowledge?
To the Best of Our Knowledge.
To the Best of Our Knowledge.
Which is a really great radio show. And it was about this guy in New Hampshire who teaches, I think, a Japanese practice of thankfulness.
A guy who teaches a Japanese practice of thankfulness.
And it was taking being grateful to a new level where you're like thankful for the painted, you know, dots between the lanes
thankful
that allow
the,
you to stay
yeah,
between
taking
the lanes.
It to another level, painted. The painted dots between the lanes.
Or you're thankful for, like, you know, the bowl that you're eating out of.
The bowl that you're eating out of.
Just the things that you just don't really think about, but that make your life so fluid. And,
yes. The things that we don't think about that can make our life so fluid.
And I felt it was, you know, a great piece because it made me think about all of those things, that it, like, exponentially grew my gratitude beyond, you know, the people I love and delicious food.
Right. Exponentially increased her gratitude beyond just the people that she loved, just to have to tune into the details of our life. Beautiful.
To the best of our knowledge.
To the best of our knowledge. You could probably listen to it again on NPR.
Yeah, you could just find it online.
Great. Thank you. Well, to the best of my knowledge, this is the end of our evening. So I will end with the words of the great sage Oprah Winfrey. Be thankful for what you have. You'll end up having more. No. If you concentrate on what you don't have, you will never, ever have enough. Well, I think I have to move on to one more. Gratitude also opens your eyes to the limitless potential of the universe, while dissatisfaction closes our eyes to it. And the last but not least, should have kept it to just this one, from Maya Angelou. This is a wonderful day. I've never seen this one before. Thank you so much for your practice, and may our practice touch everyone's practice, and may all beings come to a place in their hearts where they can be grateful for the small stuff and the large. And may our practice today and every day be dedicated to the welfare and benefit of all. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.